The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
We did hear from the president yesterday at the UN, his first speech. Let's listen in.
Our security, our prosperity, and our very freedoms are interconnected, in my view, as never before. And so, I believe we must work together as never before.
The speech was a pleistocene, in his words, for relentless diplomacy.
Yeah, exactly. And really what he was doing here is trying to extend an olive branch, mend some fences after some of these really tough international setbacks that he's faced with allies. He talked about calling on the global community here to work together to fight COVID and climate change. He did defend that chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan that had so many allies outraged. Today, the president's going to hold a COVID summit here at the White House. Part of the UN still back here at the White House because of COVID, where he's calling on developed nations to give more vaccines to underdeveloped countries.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was an update from ABC News this morning about President Biden's visit to the UN, where, of course, he is set to hold a vaccine summit. We'll be announcing, you know, he's going to be announcing that to the United States. Or, you know, what he said is, hey, we're going to double the purchase of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine shot. We're going to share it with the world. All right. He wants to get a billion doses out there as he embraces this goal of vaccinating about 70% of the global population within the next year. We'll talk vaccines coming up a little bit later. You know, once a week, I try to take a little bit of time out and give you the latest news. That's a big story. It really is. You're talking about 500 million vaccinations, a billion doses. There's a real cost to the American people on that. What does that mean for us? And what do we know about Pfizer and even its efficacy? There's a lot to talk about. Mandates, too. They're beginning to take on new life. A lot of people are saying, hey, this is, I'm about freedom, and I have a real problem with this. We'll talk about mandates coming up with Dr. Meany and so much more. Dr. Bhattacharya will be stopping by, and you're more than welcome to join me. But I want to welcome you. It's good to have you here with me this afternoon, and you are welcome anytime to pull up a chair and be part of the conversation. Love to have you as part of the family. Here's the number for you. It's 888-914-9149. Of course, we'll pray coming up. I've got a great answered prayer to share with you, too. Really cool. Happened in a very short term. We'll do that in about an hour when we gather together and really entrust our hearts to God and to His great mercy. But let's talk about the Biden administration for just a moment. As I was saying, as you heard in the audio, there was a virtual summit meeting of world leaders. They talked about getting vaccines against COVID to poor nations around the world. And according to Bloomberg, the UK, Canada, South Africa, Indonesia, as well as leaders of private industry, they were all on this call where the president said, look, we're going to buy 500 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine for distribution. We're going to bring the total doses that the nation is going to send abroad to 1.1 billion. It's a lot of doses. We have, what, 7+ billion people in the world? It's a pretty big contribution from this country. And one thing you can never say about America, you know, and you turn on your TV and you see how it's bashed. You see how some of the policies are destroying it. We are the most generous nation in the world. I mean, we truly do care for other nations, and we truly do use our treasure to help and our strength and our intelligence and all the gifts that we have here as a nation. I mean, look at the technological advances America's brought to the world. Take a look at how we've come to uphold liberty and freedom for nations around the world. Take a look at our generosity. You know, this is a blessed nation. That's why it breaks my heart. It's a dagger in my heart when I see some of these policies that spit in the face of God, that reject God's teaching, that lead us away from what our founding fathers said was so important, and that's virtue. If we don't have that, we're never going to, this experiment, which is a relatively short experiment, only 200 and some years, right? 230 some years. I don't know how it'll turn out. You know, famously, you know, Franklin said when he was coming out of the Congress there in Philadelphia, and people asked him, you know, what kind of government we had. You know, they thought, is it a monarchy? What is it? He says, no, it's a republic, if you can keep it. And I get concerned when we start to give away, when we see the erosion of too many freedoms in this country, too. I don't want to go off on a path here, and I'm about to go down a historical path. Let me keep you up to speed on the news. It just gets me fired up when I see where this great nation of ours is going. We are a good people. We are a great nation. We're a generous nation. We're a nation of immigrants. We have the most unique form of government in human history, one that upholds the inalienable right to life and to liberty, right? And you see attacks on so much of that. And again, here I go. All right, I'll dial it back. The vaccines. $1.1 billion. It's generous. It is. So when's it start? January 1. On New Year's Day, they're going to, of next year, they're going to send $375 million in funding for vaccine distribution. The goal is to get about 70% of the world vaccinated in just 1 year's time. Now, I got some questions, and I won't dive into them in great detail today for you, but what about all these variants? We know that Pfizer's efficacy when it first came out was about, what, 94, 95%, something like that? We know with Delta and a lot of the other variants we're now seeing, that efficacy rate has plummeted. Scientists are concerned about new variations, Mu and others, who are now on the horizon. How effective will this, you know, vaccination ultimately be? They say that the Moderna vaccine is actually a little bit more effective against some of these new variants, but it has three times the amount of mRNA. So we'll see. We can talk about it. That's coming up. Just putting that on your radar. Hey, yesterday you heard about the border crisis, right? And I don't know if you saw any of the video. Numbers keep changing. They said over the weekend the numbers there swelled to as high as 15,000. That's the biggest number I've heard. I heard one reporter say, hey, look, I've been looking at these numbers. The numbers are down well below, I think, double digits now, I think. I think 6,000 people, maybe 8. I don't know what the actual number is right now. But he says the camps still look as full. They really do. They really do. But 14,000, and these are mostly Haitian migrants, were all, you know, taking refuge from the blistering sun in the Del Rio, underneath that Del Rio bridge there in Texas. So the Department of Homeland Security said that they've cut that number of, you know, 14, 15, 13, 12, whatever number you wanted, into about half, with the implication that they've deported a lot of these people. However, and just a side note, the Associated Press is now reporting that Border Patrol is packing people not on the planes, but on the buses. They're actually driving them along the border and they're releasing them. So basically, what we have happening is the same thing that happened to migrants that had come up from Central and South America. This is not a story that's going to go away. It will not be a story that's going away. It got out of control. I mean, you talk about some of the policies of the Biden administration. Clearly, you see the border is a tremendous crisis for them. Afghanistan, a tremendous crisis. The economy. Take a look at what happened with not just the stock market, but our economy in general. We might see superinflation looming in the not-too-distant future, right? We've got COVID. We're still battling. I mean, there's so many different issues that this administration is currently dealing with. So we'll continue to monitor it. Let's pray. Again, we'll have elections coming up soon for midterms, and then you're going to have your generals. Think about those policies that really matter the most and what these people are going to and are they honest in their portrayal of it? If what they say, you know, hey, I'm going to do this, I'm going to get rid of COVID, or I'm going to fix the economy, or we're going to withdraw from war, you know where they stand, as long as they're being honest. But need to put in well-formed men and women. And the policies have got to be fiscally sound. They can't be socialistic, right? They can't be. The national debt is continuing to balloon right now, and it's something else we have to watch. Anyway, there's a bill in the House called the Women's Health Protection Act, and if you can read euphemisms fluently, you'll know that it's an act that would allow abortions in our country. Not that we don't already have them, right? But according to the National Catholic Register, I saw a piece there. And as I was reading it, I'm thinking, how clever. I mean, I love words. I say this to you all the time. I love them. I think, I got to say, man, they're brilliant in the way they use them. You know, those in the culture of death have just, they're on to something. The bill's been around since 2013, never went anywhere, right? But the feminist group, seeing that Roe v. Wade is going to fall, and it will fall. You mark my words. Roe v. Wade will fall sometime next year. So they want to put this into law. And the bill would outlaw prohibition on abortion at any point, right, or points in time prior to fetal viability. So it goes on to say a prohibition or restriction on a particular abortion procedure. A prohibition on abortion after fetal viability when in good health, medical judgment of the treating health care provider, continuation of the pregnancy would pose a risk to the pregnant patient's life or health. That's a mouthful, right? You say, what did you just say? Let me share this with you. It'll probably explain it a little bit better. At Monday's House Rules Committee hearing, Representative, I think it's Janet Schakowsky, she's a Democrat from Illinois, she slammed this Texas abortion law, and she was promoting this so-called Democrat Women's Health Protection Act of 2021. Listen.
But I want to tell you, this is a pro-choice nation. The majority of Americans are saying that women and whoever they choose to talk to, their spouse, their partner, their doctor, their God, can help them make a decision about ending a pregnancy. It is their decision. This is about freedom. Freedom, an autonomy of self, of bodily autonomy, to make that decision.
It's sick. That's just absolutely gross and disoriented is the right word for her. You know, we talked about this earlier in the week. I think it was Monday we had a call. I mean, a couple callers in the first segment of the show. You might have heard them if you're listening to the show. And they were all about a woman's right to terminate the child. You know, it's too expensive. They can't afford them. There's these, I mean, all of these arguments that were coming out. Nobody has the right to take life, period. And we all know it's a child in the womb. I don't care. You'd have to be absolutely mindless. You'd have to have zero intelligence to think that that child in the womb is not a human being. And nobody has a right to take human life but God. God gives it. He's the author of it. And he has the right to take it when he wants. We don't. I don't care about these euphemisms. I don't care about all the things they're saying. You know, this prohibition on abortion after fetal viability, you know, it's that last one, which is undefined, that would lead abortion to being legal right up to birth, right? Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco has been on the program many times. I have a lot of respect for that man. He called the bill, listen to this, I love what he called it. He says, it is nothing short than child sacrifice. I mean, bravo, Your Excellency. I don't think anybody could put it clearer. That's exactly what this is. This is exactly what this is. It is nothing short of child sacrifice. And he started a petition and a prayer and fasting campaign to see that this bill fails. Now, Maggie and I and our team, we're going to fast every Friday. We invite you to do the same thing. And I'm going to make that my intention this Friday. I'm going to fast for the end of this horrible deception. You know, this blindness that's going on in the culture right now. If you want more information on what Archbishop Cordiglione is doing, go to benedictinstitute.org and find the petition. And of course, you know, you can always find that information on our Twitter page as well. So anyway, there's a lot. We'll do a segment sometime on this personal autonomy argument versus the moral code coming up maybe in the days ahead, because I certainly think that it is important to talk about. I want to deal with one other thing. You know, we're talking about the housing. We're talking about the financial crisis that's brewing in Congress right now. The House has passed a bill that would suspend the debt ceiling again, and they also want to pass a temporary spending bill to fund the government up until December 1st. The bill goes to the Senate next, and then it may not get the support of Republicans. If the bill doesn't pass, then we'd be facing a government shutdown October 1st. So who knows what we're going to see. But we could also see the government default on paying its bills, something that has never happened in the history of the United States. So Republicans, you know, they're under pressure right now to approve the debt increase. Here's what Bloomberg News had to say. Listen.
As we stare down what is now a countdown of 9 days until a possible government shutdown, and no one actually expects that to happen. No one's predicting it, but we are apparently playing some games here in the meantime. This could have been put together a couple of weeks ago. And as we do head for this potential collision course, the Democratic leadership has decided to put a debt ceiling measure inside this government funding resolution that's going to be up for a vote within days here. Not increasing the debt ceiling, to be clear, but suspending it straight through the midterms. They're trying to hang this around the debt itself, around the necks of Republicans who say they will not move on the debt ceiling. Mitch McConnell has been in lockstep with his members on this. It's likely that this would die in the Senate once it gets there. But again, Democrats want to make a point. Chuck Schumer calling this the dine and dash of historic proportion, suggesting that Republicans went on a spending spree under Trump, and now they don't want to pay the credit card bill. This could evolve quite a bit, though, in the next couple of days, and it's likely the Democrats will end up with a standalone bill in dealing with the debt ceiling.
Yeah, I heard Mitt Romney the other day say, hey, you know, Democrats, they don't want our input on spending. They want to spend $3.5 trillion, $5.4 trillion, but they want us to raise the debt ceiling, right? They want our help in raising that debt ceiling. So, you know, I think we're at a real crossroads. I really do. I think we are at a crossroads on Capitol Hill. We might see a government shutdown. I hope not. You know, if Congress has its way, if this $1.2 trillion, 2,700-page infrastructure bill that's waiting for a vote gets passed, let me tell you about something that's in it. This is some of the weirdness that's in these trillions of dollars that they're spending. There's a provision in it that would require car makers to come up with a technology that can detect if you are drinking, if you're drunk, you know, and then it will just disable your car, especially if your blood alcohol content is 0.08 or above. So if the bill passes, the auto industry has about 5 years to come up with this new technology, although that could be pushed out further. Some say it could be as far as 10 years, but that's what's in here. It's attached to this infrastructure bill. So you get in your car. I don't know how it works. You have to blow? You have to have a blower in there? What if you and your spouse go out to dinner? You didn't drink. You're driving. But there's molecules of alcohol in the air from your spouse or your buddy. You went to the game. He had a few too many brews, right? How does it work? I mean, how do you do that? Will somebody have to blow before you start a car? Maybe people are saying, fine, that's the new protocol for starting your car. You don't have to stick your key in your ignition anymore. You press a button. Maybe you've got a... You got to blow. I don't know. Some ideas have been proposed, including sensors that detect alcohol in the air of the cabin. I don't think that's going to fly. There's some that say there's a sensor that would stick, you know, kind of a sensor on the stick shift where you put the car in the gear, and that would determine the presence of alcohol in the driver's sweat. I never heard of that. It's pretty cool, though. The other thing is they're talking about cameras. How would you like a camera in your car being placed inside aimed at the driver? So the air sensor idea has been tossed aside just because if you're not the designated driver, you know, then how are you going to drive your car if somebody else is in there and those molecules are there? But cameras, they're being explored right now. Anyway, this provision, which is actually a piece of this bipartisan legislation called Reduce Impaired Driving for Everyone Act, it was introduced in April 2021. It's going to direct the U.S. Department of Transportation to establish a technology safety standard for automakers within just a couple years. Here's a little bit more. Listen to this.
Driving while under the influence of alcohol is deadly. There's no question about it. But a new proposal being introduced as part of the new infrastructure bill could put the threat of drunk drivers on the road firmly behind us. The Guardian reports the plan would require car manufacturers to include driver monitoring technology, which would be able to tell whether the vehicle's operator is impaired. With the plan saying, quote, advanced drunk and impaired driving prevention technology must be standard equipment in all new passenger motor vehicles. Some say this sort of system raises ethics concerns related to privacy and surveillance, but supporters of the motion argue it could save thousands of lives. In fact, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, between 2010 and 2019, over 10,000 people died each year in drunk driving-related collisions, and a million people are arrested by police for driving under the influence every year as well. This new proposal comes after new alcohol detection technology, the first of its kind, is set to release commercially by the end of the year. Still, some say the endeavor will likely be more difficult to implement than many likely expect. The Center for Automotive Research Chief Executive Carla Bailo also weighed in, saying it will have to be a fairly robust system, as people will inevitably try to cheat it.
All right, I'm joined right now by Russ White, a well-known voice in computer networking and advocates for simplicity and privacy and decentralizing the internet. He just finished a book called Unintended Dystopia. He understands this technology and is here to give us some perspective. Russ, welcome back. Good to have you with me today.
Well, great to be here, and thanks for inviting me on again.
This is fascinating. I think it will become a reality. Personally, if I was a betting man, I think we're going to probably see this. Obviously, drunk driving is a major issue in the country, and to get a control over it would be great. Your thoughts on the tech. What kind of technology do you think is going to be implemented? And then follow that up with privacy, because, you know, having a camera in your car that somebody can hack or look at, or being able to shut down someone's automobile, there's a lot of privacy concerns here.
Yeah, so my guess is they're going to be going after impairment, not just being drunk particularly. But impairment could mean a lot of things. It could mean you're falling asleep at the wheel or whatever. So I suspect it'll be broadened beyond drunk driving before it's over with, if it's not already there, because they're already using the word impairment there, right?
Yep.
And I think this is probably going to be related, or I just saw an article yesterday or today talking about how Apple is going to try to figure out from how fast you type and your facial expression and stuff if you are depressed.
Wow.
Or what your emotional state is. So I suspect this is all going to be tied together in using your facial expressions, the way you're driving, how fast you're turning compared to how fast you normally turn, braking, things like that. And it's not going to necessarily be just a chemical thing, like it's going to be a combination of things. So that's my guess as to what they'll be doing.
So car makers right now are pushing for self-driving cars. I think that's an inevitability, too. We're going to see that sooner rather than later. How successful do you think those efforts are going to be? And will we need this drunk driving technology if we have self-driving cars? That could really change the landscape.
Yeah, self-driving cars could change the landscape. Of course, self-driving has its own entire set of problems about privacy and stuff like this. You know, these LIDARs and these cameras that are always on, like you're talking about, who has access to that information?
Right.
What could they use it for, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, if you're driving impaired, is it going to call a police officer immediately
while you're driving
down the road?
That's a great point. Does your car get shut off? What if you're in a bad neighborhood or in a, you know, it's a blizzard, you know? Who knows? I mean, there's lots of different concerns. What about the safeguard for the technology? I mean, any concerns about these being hacked? I'm sure they'll try to put safeguards in there, but you can also see the danger in that.
Yeah, so I think it's... In the modern world, we use general-purpose processors so much for everything, and all of those processors are so hackable. And it's going to be really, really hard to stop your car from getting hacked. And by the way, you know, you said bad neighborhood or something, but, you know, even the case where you're driving down the road and you have a heart attack.
Right.
And you're driving impaired, and your car shuts off. And you're like, no, I'm trying to make it to the hospital.
Right. That's another great point.
You know?
Another great point. Well, we are reliant on technology. I love technology. I think it can make life a lot better. It's inherently neutral. If it's used for good, goods are multiplied, right? If it's used for illicit purposes, then, of course, evils can be multiplied. So what do you see coming? Just final thoughts from you on this issue. And if people want to check out your book, too, by the way, Unintended Dystopia, get people plugged into that as well.
Yeah, sure. So what I think see coming is just an increase in surveillance. I mean, it's just too profitable and there's too much... Yeah. money to be made in it and too much power to be gained. The book itself isn't published quite yet. Whip and Stock is still working on it. I emailed them yesterday to say, hey, what's up?
Well, that's great. Awesome.
It should be soon.
That's awesome. Hey, thank you, Russ. Good to talk with you. Appreciate your time. Really do.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, keep up the great work. That's Russ White. It is about 26 after the hour. I need to take a short pause. When we come back, I've got to tell you about a couple things that are developing. A TV meteorologist of 33 years declined to get vaccinated, citing his personal freedoms. Wait to hear what happened to him. We'll also take a look at some of these vax mandates and more new developments. I'll fill you in. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
In the spirit of Socrates, who was executed for asking questions, this lesson will consist of only one question. When a person has done the same job to the satisfaction of her employer for 20 years, is it right or is it wrong to suddenly demand that they submit to an unnecessary medical procedure in order to keep their job? In this case, the procedure is an injection of a substance that has not been fully tested for safety. It is designed to prevent an illness that poses little threat to the employee. The employee is not allowed to ask questions. She may only submit to the procedure or be fired. To my first year students, is this right or is this wrong?
Sorry. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was a teacher, a professor who was fired. Fired from Huron College at the University of Western Ontario, where she worked as a professor of ethics for 2 decades. She was there over 20 years. And because of her decision not to be vaccinated, they got rid of her. A professor of ethics. Look, she's been speaking out against the university's vaccine mandates and questioned the ethics of coercing people into medical procedures, coercing them. You know, Dr. Aaron Curiotti, who's a great psychiatrist, he's an MD, he's a guest on this radio program over the years. He is in a legal battle right now with the University of California, Irvine. And he said, and what he said I always thought was so brilliant, he says, look, when I signed my contract, my agreement with you, I never said at some point in the future, I am agreeing to let you dictate my medical, my health care treatment, right? I never gave up my liberties, my freedoms. You know, we had a totally different arrangement, and yet that's what's happening. You know, I think Curiotti had COVID and has natural immunity and therefore doesn't feel he needs the vaccine. He says, told me off air, he said, I'm not against vaccinations. I'm vaccinated all over. He says, but I do have a particular problem with moving forward with this, and in particular the way we are moving. So, you know, today, Professor Ponese, she, you know, who looks straight into the camera at the end of that very emotional YouTube video, she says, I'm going to teach you a short lesson on a university-accepted ethics of coercing people into medical procedures. And she says, I will be the example. That's what she said. And she truly was. She was the example. A lot of people are losing their jobs, and it's not just her. You know, with these mandates coming, right, you're going to see more people. I mean, I've heard from many of you who called me and said, look, I'm a nurse, and, I've got to step down from my job. I heard the story of a 33-year weatherman. I mean, he was not 33 years old. He served as a weather guy, meteorologist for 33 years. His name was Carl Bonnock. He was a weatherman for WLUC-TV on Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And the company he worked for came out and said, okay, we want everybody vaccinated. We're mandating. You get the vaccine. So he refused. He didn't want it. I don't know what his reasons were. He was fired. He was fired. Caroline Pinto, she was a nurse. She was a nursing student, I should say. She was at the University of Colorado in Denver. She actually filed papers. She claimed a religious exemption on the shots. She said she was told that she could do that no problem. Okay, so religious exemptions. Let's talk about those today. Suddenly, the school demanded more stringent reasons for her request for a religious exemption. And when she provided them, she found out that she was denied. She was actually kicked out of the nursing program. She was kicked out of the nursing program. Indiana University Health, they told their employees, get vaccinated by the 14th of the month or else. 300 people were suspended without pay. They were suspended. I know I'm making it up, right? No, I'm serious. You know, 300 people were suspended without pay to either get the vaccine or risk being fired. 125 of them quit. 300 suspended, 125 of them quit. And they're straining already for this health system in Indiana, an already short staff, right? It's a very short staffed facility. And I've heard other physicians, I've heard other medical professionals say that they're not going to do this. And I always bring up the point, well, how do you do it if you have two incomes? You know, you needed to pay the mortgage, keep the kids in the braces, pay the education, the school costs, the car, whatever, right? Life is expensive. To step down and to lose your job, I mean, it's a sacrifice for a lot of people. You heard yesterday, right? I shared the story of what happened in the Archdiocese of Moncton in New Brunswick, how the what was happening with the Archdiocese there. They've decreed that you have to show proof of vaccination to go to Mass. You have to show that you are vaxxed if you want to go to Mass. Now, I have a real problem with that, personally. I really do. There's got to be another way then. Why not set up a separate room, televise the Mass in the other room, and have somebody distribute the Eucharist to those people? You know, at Easter or Christmas, you go to these churches, right? And they're so overflowing with all the Christers, the people who come at Christmas and Easter. You know, you can't get in. You got to stand or whatever. If you show up a little bit, you know, before Mass starts, forget it. You're in some other room, right? You can't even get in the parking lot. Why not set up a separate room? Why deny the faithful the Eucharist, the bread of life, the source of true healing? Well, that came after news that 20 of the diocese's 53 parishes were at risk of closing because of decreased attendance after COVID. And, of course, they also had their own sexual abuse claims up there. But that's not going to help. It's not going to help. They're not the only church. Starting on October 1st, if you go to the Vatican State, right, if you want to go to Vatican City State, you have to show that you received the vaccine. You have to have a negative test within 3 days, or you have to have negative molecular or antigenic tests. So it's not like you absolutely have to be vaccinated, but they don't want you in there unless they know that you've been tested. One final story, and Dr. Joseph Meany is going to be joining me. You're welcome to join me too. My number here, if you want to get in, is 888-914-9149. New York, right? In New York. Though the state's mandate for healthcare workers is being challenged in federal court by, I think, 17 different healthcare workers. And our friends, of course, at the Thomas More Law Center, wonderful organization. So far, they've been winning their cases. The judge ordered the state to suspend that mandate, and he's extended the stay until October 12th. The mandate has no provision at all for religious exemptions. None for religious exemptions. Let's talk about it. Let's see where we're going, because, look, this is just the beginning. I think this is going to be the new normal. I'm joined right now, once again, by Dr. Joseph Meany, president of the National Catholic Bioethics Center in Philadelphia. It's good to have him with me once again. Doctor, thank you for your time. I know how valuable it is.
Well, thank you.
Let's dive into mandates. I mean, people are losing their jobs in droves. I think the really problematic situation here, even more than people saying, look, I'm not going to work as a nurse or a physician or as a weatherman or whatever the issue might be, is the Archdiocese of Moncton saying you can't go to Mass if you haven't been vaccinated. You're an ethicist, a good Catholic. Give me your take on that and the rationale behind it. Maybe I'm reading this wrong, and I always want to be honest.
Yeah, no, I saw something about that as well, and it just kind of left me flabbergasted. No idea what's going on with that, because it's unique, and I've never heard of anything else like that. And furthermore, I guess I've just never heard of any rationale for that. So, if at the height of the pandemic, they were still able to have masses in some places, et cetera. And it's safe to social distance, et cetera. I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't seem like requiring a medical procedure for the sacraments makes any sense.
So let's talk about not just, the fact you need to be vaccinated or show proof to get into the Vatican or some of these churches. And I understand that probably this is all done from good intentions. So they want to safeguard the people that work there as well as, fellow, parish goers or whoever may be faithful. But mandates for those who work in a, in a facility somewhere and they want to claim a religious exemption because they have a real concern about the association with the aborted fetal cell lines or whatever the issue might be. Explain what's happening here and why religious exemptions don't seem to get any, they seem to be getting less and less respect and acceptance.
Well, I think there is a trend in our society, right, in the United States that is secularist, right, that does not see religious liberty as one of the fundamental liberties. And I think that is tragically manifested here because the state of New York, for instance, as you mentioned, doesn't want religious exemptions to be put into place as part of their vaccine mandates. I think there are a lot of institutions that don't really have a huge amount of respect for people's religious beliefs. And I think also there's a kind of, lack of empathy, if you will, with the moral distress and suffering of people whose religious beliefs, deeply held beliefs, are being trampled upon.
Right. And I do want to be clear about the Vatican. My understanding is Mass is still for everybody, even the unvaccinated. But, if you want to do anything else, the Vatican tour or be in Vatican City, you can't do that. These mandates are something, I think, to your point, that our secular culture doesn't respect. I don't think they value it. There are secular authorities who are now starting to demand greater scrutiny of people's claims for these religious exemptions. I don't know a whole lot about the process of religious exemption. I don't know what you need to do to prove that you you conscientiously or religiously object to the vaccine on the grounds, and who's the arbiter of whether or not that meets the criteria? Is it the boss who says, "Eh, I don't think that's good enough reason," or is there a standard? I mean, some people can wither under that kind of scrutiny. I mean, how do you stand your ground, and who is the arbiter of whether or not that's a valid claim?
Yeah, that is actually a very good question, because it really depends on where the mandate is coming from. But if it's coming from the employer, then it ends up being the employer who decides whether or not to grant it, to accommodate it. Mm-hmm. So if it's coming from an institution or a government authority, then I guess they would be the ones who would, you know, do so. I mean, they are required by law, you know, the Civil Rights Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, to offer religious exemptions. And so I think that's why it was successful to get a restraining order there in New York when they were just taking that out. But it's still one of the problems with the mandates, right? Is that individuals, in a sense, are at the mercy of others to decide whether or not they'll be accommodated or not.
Right. I'm going to grab a few calls for you, Doctor, too. Our number here, if you want to get in, I'll jump on the phones in just a quick second. It's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. But before I go to the calls, let me just follow up with one of the arguments you hear a lot. And, you know, I've even heard the Pope say, hey, you know, get vaccinated. You know, it's for the common good. You know, do it out of love for your brother. We're hearing this common good case being made. And when the vaccines don't prevent transmission, because the vaccines don't do that, and they don't prevent you from getting necessarily the disease. We've had a lot of these breakthrough cases, Jesse Jackson, a lot of people who've been fully vaccinated end up, you know, getting sick with COVID. How do you address this common good argument for people who say, hey, I would do it, but this is not like my chickenpox vaccine or my tetanus or whatever it might be, my shots that I get, you know? How do you address the common good argument when it's possible still to transmit and still to get sick?
Yeah, I think a very good point, you know, valid point that you raise is that these vaccines are different from others, so they require very particular discernment because it doesn't seem like the level of protection they provide is as good as some of the more traditional vaccines. And then the other question is, you know, do they have more side effects than traditional vaccines, you know, and that's a question that will be answered over time. But it seems like, you know, that there are definitely side effects, and you know, as rare as they are, they're real. People have died after being vaccinated in small numbers. So, I think the main question that really needs to be answered is how are we as a society going to be treating people? You know, are we going to be looking at their liberty and trying to accommodate them and be as open as we can? Or are we going to be more authoritarian and say, wait a second, we know what's good for you, and therefore we're going to do it? So the common good is all about, you know, promoting what is good for others. Violating the consciences of people is not, you know, a textbook way to promote the common good.
Right.
I think, you know, the Holy Father has very, very much in his own personal conscience determined that, you know, taking the vaccine was right for him,
right,
and he thinks it might be right for others, and so he promotes it, but as a free choice, not as a kind of obligatory, you know, where you can be forced to do it.
All right, my guest today is Dr. Joseph Beeny, and Dr., great points, great conversation as always. I'm going to take just a short pause here, and when we return, we'll jump into the calls. If you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on. If you want to sneak in, there's a line open at 888-914-9149. Stay with us. Our conversation continues right after this.
Insight and analysis right here. It's the Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
I had a great guest on the other day. His name was Wesley J. Smith. We talked about climate change and some of the policies that are going to be used. He made a case that, you know, the government may use climate change, like they're using COVID to mandate things and to take away maybe some of your liberties. You can listen to that. It was hour three of my broadcast yesterday. But he wrote a great piece talking about vaccine mandates and why they probably are not a very good idea. You know, in a free society, you know, moral objections matter. You know, millions of Americans have these moral objections, and yet they're not being respected. They're not being respected. I'll take a few of your calls. We also have other things. We've got natural immunity, you know, so those who have had been sick may not need the vaccination after all. And then the hypocrisy, you know, there's no mandate for illegal immigrants coming in, but if you travel this country any other route, you have to be vaccinated, right, or show proof that you were not infected. And there's always the risk that these things can backfire. Doctor, I'm going to go to the phone. Some great calls. Before I do, though, you and I were talking off air, and we have to bring those who are listening into this conversation because that's a great point. We were talking about the duty to care, and I was having this conversation with you about how I've heard physicians come out, and they're saying, I am not going to treat any patient who's unvaccinated. And when I hear that, I'm thinking, my gosh, I've never heard of a medical provider saying something like that. If you're not going to treat him for COVID, will you treat him for Ebola? Will you treat him for something else, the flu or some other contagious, you know, virus or disease? Give me your take on physicians today saying, I'm not going to treat unvaccinated people. How can they say that? Don't we all take a Hippocratic oath?
Correct. Yeah, it is very strange because, and I've seen, you know, multiple references to this in the press, and there are different things that are said about different physicians, but the narrative tends to be the same, which is that they're saying, well, you know, this is something that I think they should be doing, and therefore, I'm not going to be treating them. You know, it almost sounds like a form of punishment. You know, that, well, you know, you don't deserve health care because you're not vaccinated, and that, of course, is completely against medical ethics. You know, in times of pandemic, one has to treat everybody. You know, even a great risk to the healthcare provider. It's one of the heroic sides of medicine. But to kind of put that down as a almost like a moral judgment. You know, like you don't deserve care because you haven't gone through vaccination. Is a big problem from a medical ethical perspective. Yeah.
Well, let's do this. I only have a few minutes, of course. You know how quickly time goes. We'll jump into the phones, take a number of calls. Thank you for your patience. If you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you. Dr. Margaret's listening in Wisconsin. Doctor, welcome. You're on the air with Dr. Joseph Meany.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can. Yep. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. The question is about the common good of the vaccine. So I am a pediatrician. I am all about vaccination. I am not about the mandates. But the common good, I believe that to take it a little deeper, I have some form of moral obligation to help do what I can to end the pandemic. So does the common good have something to do with, for instance, people choosing not to vaccinate? And so we get sick with COVID and we overwhelm the ICUs. But now I'm having a heart attack or acute appendicitis, but the hospital is full.
Right.
And therefore, common ailments can't be treated because we're overwhelming the healthcare system. Thank you.
A wonderful, wonderful point. I got a doctor. Let's address that. I mean, she made a great case for being vaccinated.
Yeah. No, I think it's true that when one is discerning whether or not to get vaccinated, the personal circumstances matter quite a bit, right? If you're in a situation where you're a part of the country where the you know, the hospitals are being overrun and this sort of situation, that puts a greater responsibility to say, okay, well, wait a second, maybe I should go through with it. But again, it depends on each personal circumstance, you know, of individuals, but also their communities. And one definitely should take that into account when discerning what to do. However, I don't think it's something that's kind of a blanket thing, you know, where the general common good for all of society means that I need to do this. I think it's much more community based, mm-hmm. right, and particular, so that each person should be discerning on their own, because it's you know, as much as there's global solidarity, what really matters in terms of, you know, exactly healthcare being overloaded, et cetera, is your own personal community.
Karen in St. Louis, Missouri. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My comment is also concerning the common good. Unborn babies, they are part of the common good.
Mm-hmm.
And I, don't know if I would trust a researcher that doesn't hold the sacredness of life. Why would they care about my life with the vaccine? That is all.
All right. Thank you. Doctor, you want to respond to that?
Well, it's a very good point in general, right, about all the fetal research that's going on right now and how, you know, so many human embryos and human fetuses, so preborn children, are being killed and are being, you know, just used for scientific purposes in a way that is very degrading of human rights and the dignity of the human person. And so as much as that system can be challenged, the common good will be served, right? If it's business as usual and we don't protest against abortion-derived cell lines, against, you know, fetal tissue research and harvesting and killing of human embryos, then, of course, we're going to have a situation where our society is going to become more and more coarse, you know, and science, instead of being life-giving, is going to be death-dealing.
All right. Our next call comes from Illinois. Teresa is listening to you there, doctor. Hi, Teresa. Good afternoon.
Hi. I work at a Catholic school, and I was told this week that I had to go home because I don't want to get vaccinated or take the weekly test, and I can't even use a religious exemption. I just think, what is happening to our world? I work at a Catholic school. This is ridiculous. I feel like I'm forced to do this.
All right.
Yeah. Done. So, I mean, I think that, you know, again, it very much depends on the community and what the local situation is, but there should be respect for conscience, right, for individuals' beliefs. And in terms of, you know, requirements, saying that a person, you know, maybe not be required to get vaccinated, but they might be required to take a weekly test or something like that, I mean, those can be reasonable compromises, as long as it's not being done as like a form of punishment, right? Where I've heard of some instances where they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to test these people with these, you know, invasive tests and stick them all the way into their sinuses, you know, et cetera. That, you know, that, again, has a kind of a punishment side of it as opposed to a public health. But I think the important is to see, you know, what is the actual situation and need in your community, and you know, what are reasonable accommodations of people's consciences that can work, you know, to keep everybody safe, but at the same time respecting everybody's beliefs.
All right, Teresa, I'm going to move along just because we have so many phone calls here. I appreciate you voicing that concern. Let's go to Sherry in Wisconsin. Sherry, good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment, it would be good for the common good if everyone were to stop smoking, and that's not being mandated.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too.
So.
There's a contrarian view for you, doctor. Yeah, a little bit different. I mean, smoking kind of kills you. I guess secondhand smoke can kill somebody else, but COVID, we know the death rate on this thing is pretty serious. But your thoughts, doc?
Yeah, but it does make a good point, right? Is it at a certain level, we accept risks in our society, you know, because, and St. Thomas Aquinas was very clear about this. There are certain evils that if you ban the evil, you commit more evil, you know, create a greater situation of problems than if you don't ban it at all, right. If there's a certain toleration. You know, smoking kind of falls a little bit into that category. But, you know, other things too, like, you know, speed limits. I mean, it's very clear that if we reduce the speed limit on the interstate to 15 miles an hour, we might save a lot of people from high-speed car crash deaths. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, it would create chaos. So in a sense, you know, we don't believe in zero risk as a society, and it's reasonable not to. So the question becomes like, so what is reasonable here? In terms of, you know, the COVID risk, what kind of things can we ask people to do, and what things, you know, are violations of their religious liberty, their conscience rights to require them to do? And I think as a society, we have to be thinking about that.
Yeah, where does COVID fall? I mean, Sherry says banning smoking makes a lot of sense. Let's ban smoking. Then you have personal freedoms. People can do what they want to do in the privacy of their home or other places like that. How does COVID differ from that?
Yeah, so COVID is, you know, is a contagious disease. I mean, in some sense, right, there's a bit of an analogy to AIDS in the sense that AIDS was also a contagious disease, although it required more intimate contact to pass. And then there was a lot of, you know, concern about discriminating against people who had AIDS and respecting their privacy rights as well. I think COVID falls, you know, in that spectrum a little bit further along because it's contagious by air. But again, not, you know, the worst kind of disease that would require the strictest forms of quarantine and, you know, things like Ebola or other things like right. that are, you know, 30% mortality rate, et cetera. So it kind of falls on a spectrum. And I think it's, you know, it's probably more serious in terms of requiring safety precautions than AIDS or some other diseases that were right. transmissible, but not as much as the worst possible scenarios.
Well, Doctor, I want to thank you for your time. I know that we'll continue to take a look at this. Mandates are something that are not going away. I think they're going to intensify. I think we need to protect our freedoms, be on the right side of the issue. Thank you for your time. That's Dr. Joseph Meany from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. We'll continue a conversation. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya will join us after the chaplet. I want to take a look at natural immunity versus vaccinated immunity. Is one better? And if you have natural immunity, you know, do you need to be vaccinated? We'll look at that and a whole lot more. But right now, let's pray.